You're tuned to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio, with a special program today to remember a 20-year-old Czech student who exactly 37 years ago became a focus and symbol of the nation. His name was Jan Palach, and at the top of Prague's Wenceslas Square, just below the National Museum, you can find a small memorial to him.
Bratříčku, nevzlikej, to nejsou bubáci, vždyť už si velikej, to jsou jen vojáci. Přijeli v hranatých, železných maringotkách.
On the 16th of January 1969, Jan Palach doused himself in petrol and set himself alight on the square. It was a desperate attempt to reverse the gradual process of demoralization that set in when Soviet-led troops crushed the reforms of the Prague Spring just 5 months before. 3 days later, Jan Palach died in a Prague burns clinic. Hundreds of thousands attended his funeral, and his name became a symbol around the world of the Czechoslovak tragedy. In a few minutes, we'll be talking to Jaroslava Mosorová, the doctor who first treated Palach when he was rushed to hospital, who spoke to him in the last days of his life.
It was an act of revolt against a desperate situation. There was desperation in it, of course. But he saw nothing else. He just couldn't think of nothing else that could somehow make a difference, that could somehow stop it or at least slow down the process of demoralization, which was setting in and which was unbearable. And that is why I think that he should never be forgotten.
Jan Palach's death had further echoes in recent Czechoslovak history. 17 years ago, in January 1989, the week of the 20th anniversary was marked by a series of demonstrations in Prague, which were violently crushed by police and came to be known as Palach Week. Many have seen this as the starting point of the Velvet Revolution, which culminated 10 months later in November 1989.
Na cestách klikatých, bratříčku v polobotkách. Prší a venku se setmělo, tato noc nebude krátká. Beránka vlku se zachtělo, bratříčku, zavřel si vrát.
Jan Palach has been the subject of many listeners' letters over recent months, and over the next few minutes, Pavla Horáková will be looking through some of your letters in a special edition of Mailbox.
In today's Mailbox, we'll be reading from your letters devoted to the memory of Jan Palach. Let's start with John Murphy from Great Britain.
I have never forgotten Jan Palach, even though I come from a country far from his home, a country the pre-war British Prime Minister called a faraway country of which we know little. In his day it was true enough, by 1969 less so, and the West watched with enthusiasm and hope as the Prague Spring unfolded. Then the Soviet army rolled in to, in quotes, restore order, and we watched with dread. Well-founded as it turned out. But we also saw the resistance of the Czech people and appreciated their desire for liberty. Then Jan Palach made the supreme sacrifice, and while we were horrified at the manner of his death, the nobility of his act was appreciated by all and really showed us what this repression really meant to those who lived it. I'm sure his memory is still dear to the people of your country. Be assured that it's held dear by all those outside your borders who remember that day.
Jamie Marshall follows Radio Prague's broadcasts in Prague.
I'm a 50-year-old Englishman living in Vinohrady, just up the road from Czech radio. I remember the events of 1968 so vividly, watched via the BBC on a black and white TV. I felt then, as I do now, a strong sense of identity with the Czechs. Thanks for the articles on Jan Palach, Jan Zajíc and Evšen Plocek.
Leslie Farmler from New Orleans also remembers the events from 37 years ago.
I was a reporter in Beirut and not much older than Jan Palach when the BBC broadcast the news of his death, with a clip of the Czech announcer's voice breaking as she read her script.
Jan Lia from the United Kingdom too was about the same age as Jan Palach.
I was in my early 20s, living in England, when Jan took his own life. I remember he begged others to throw more petrol on him, to kill him quicker. His actions and courage have always been an inspiration to me, and as long as he's remembered, his death won't have been in vain.
A listener who only signed as Lana had a few questions to ask.
Thank you for a very interesting read about Jan Palach. I was just wondering, wasn't he a philosophy student? I was also curious about a few other things. I read that Jan was part of a group of 8 students who had all planned to kill themselves by fire. The letter Palach left behind, can it be found in English somewhere? I will be visiting Prague shortly, and Jan fascinates me. It would be interesting to know a bit more about him before I go there.
Jan Palach studied history and political economics at the Faculty of Philosophy. He left a suicide note entitled Torch No. 1. A wave of protest suicide followed. Worker Josef Hlavatý, student Jan Zajíc, builder Miroslav Malinka, Blanka Nacházelová and worker Evžen Plocek. In his email, Tom O'Neill also asks a question.
I've been reading an article about Jan Palach written by David Vaughan. Could you please tell me if, when Jan Palach's ashes were returned to Prague, they were reburied in his grave in the Olšany Cemetery?
Jan Palach's ashes were first buried in Olšany. In 1973, the police moved them to the town of Šetaty, where Jan Palach's relatives lived. In 1990, after the Velvet Revolution, they were again moved to Prague. And Trevor Bunn follows Radio Prague in Birmingham, England.
Although I was in Prague for only 2 days, I actively sought out the places that Czech citizens had made their greatest sacrifice in defending the honour of their country and its people. The first place was a small memorial to where Jan Palach had immolated himself in Wenceslas Square. This act of defiance I witnessed as a 13-year-old in 1969 on television and in the newspapers. It shook me to the core and made me aware, for the first time in my early life, of the reality of what passion and resolve meant in the face of oppression.
A listener from Glasgow, who only signed as Craig, is reacting to a music video by the British band Kasabian, which they dedicated to Jan Palach.
For months I had wondered who the bold Jan Palach was after watching Kasabian's music video on TV. The band got me curious, and they must have thousands more curious, in keeping the guy remembered. Music can entertain and educate.
And staying with music, Alessio Pagnucco from Italy himself wrote a song about Jan.
In my little town, Passiano di Pordenone, we want to dedicate a square to Jan Palach. Meanwhile, here's our song to Jan Palach.
So let's listen to a song called Jan Palach by Alessio Pagnucco from Italy.
Così, bandiere rosse su una città, in Occidente c'è solo viltà. Primavera di libertà, carri armati nelle strade, il sangue a Praga è sparso al vento, quanto orrore in quel momento. Quanti fiori sul selciato, quante lacrime avete versato, quante lacrime avete versato per Praga. Volti grigi senza nome, soldati russi e terrore, giù le mani dal mio paese, il mio sangue, la vile offese. Strade vuote, solo un uomo e un altare, sacrificio per l'onore, sul rogo un giovane muore, quanti fiori sul selciato, quante lacrime avete versato.
A song dedicated to Jan Palach by Alessio Pagnucco, ending today's special edition of Mailbox. Thank you very much for all those letters, and please keep them coming. The address is Radio Prague, 12099 Prague, the Czech Republic, or english@radio.cz.
Thank you very much, Pavla, for Mailbox. And as I said at the beginning of the programme,
we'll continue with the subject of Jan Palach. Yaroslava Mozarova is a doctor and has also had an exceptional career as a writer, a diplomat and politician. Until recently, she was a member of the upper house of the Czech Parliament. But back in 1969, she was working as a burn specialist in Prague, and she was a doctor who did the first examination of Jan Palach when he was rushed to hospital on the 16th of January. Earlier this week, I went to see Dr. Mozarova. We talked about the events that led to Palach's sacrifice and the legacy of his act to this day, an act that will always remain controversial. She started our conversation by telling me about her part in those events 37 years ago.
Well, at that time, when Jan Palach set himself afire, when he decided for this ultimate sacrifice, I was working in the burn center, the only burn center in Prague, which is very near the National Museum where it all happened. So he was, of course, brought to our burn center, to our hospital. And I was there, and I happened to be the one who did the first surgical debridement. And at that time, Jan Palach still could talk, so we did talk. Yes, we did.
He must have been in extraordinary pain with the degree of the burns that he had.
Well, yes and no, because the skin, when it's really destroyed by heat, does not hurt, because the nerves are destroyed as well. It was more his whole body, his bones, his joints, his, you know, he must have felt very, very ill, extremely ill. But the skin, as I said, when the burn is very deep, does not hurt.
And he spoke, I mean, what was he talking about? I believe that he was very, very concerned about how people were reacting to his act, that people should understand why he had done it.
Already, as the nurses told me, already when he was in the elevator and being taken up to the intensive care unit, he kept telling the nurses, please tell people why I did it. Please try to make them understand. Please tell people why I did it. And of course, when people say that he did it because of the invasion of the Warsaw Pact army, that's not really so. He did it because of the demoralization which was setting in. He was a young man. He had some hopes in the Dubček, Prague, spring. He had some illusions that it might even work. And he saw, as all of us saw, so many people of talent and courage suddenly emerged from nowhere, heaven knows where, during the Prague spring. And then so many of these people disclaimed their statements they made during the Prague spring. So many of them gave in, sold their souls. That was what he couldn't bear, what he wanted to stop, and he wanted to do something that couldn't be played down, that couldn't be kept secret, that just would necessarily attract public attention. And he really wanted to shake the conscience of the nation.
Do you think he did the right thing?
I can never sanction suicide. But it did have the effect he wanted. It did serve the purpose he wanted it to serve. It can never be repeated, of course, and I'm very angry when I hear of a similar case, because it belittles. It cannot be repeated. Zaitz, of course, he deserves the same respect as Palach, because that was the same period.
That was just afterwards, wasn't he? Yes. He was the second of the so-called human torches.
But he's not mentioned so often because he died immediately, while Palach lingered for those days. And the first day, as I said, one could speak with him. I must say that it did bring him solace and did bring him some happiness, I suppose is too much to say. because we kept bringing him messages from people, from factory teams, from miners, from universities, from all kinds of people, saying that they understand. So he knew it was not in vain.
Do you think he knew that he was going to die?
Oh, yes, he did. He certainly did. I think that he would have liked to stay alive, but that he was absolutely reconciled to the fact that he's going to die. Because very often he started to suffocate because his breathing was affected. The heat did a lot of damage all the way down to the lungs, so he was condemned. He couldn't live.
And his act, I mean, to set himself alight in that way, it seems the act of a fanatic. Did you have the impression that there was something of the fanatic in him?
No, there wasn't, and I'm convinced of this. I'm really convinced. I spoke with him long enough, and I heard his reactions to things. No, he was an absolutely normal, balanced young man. I'm absolutely sure of it. Rational, who knew what he is doing, why he is doing it. Because, late in the 80s, when already the East Germans were revolting and the other countries that were in the Soviet bloc were slowly revolting, the Poles certainly, they were the first. And here it was worse than ever. I thought, he should have done it now. This is the moment. And I even sort of, shouldn't one do something? Not, of course, to set oneself afire, because, as I said, such a thing should never be repeated, but to offer one's life in some very dramatic way.
There's something that troubles me a bit in what Palach did, that it seems to be an act of desperation, in a way, creating a victim rather than actively in defiance of what was happening. It worries me a little, the idea of the victim as hero.
I do understand. It was an act of revolt against a desperate situation. There was desperation in it, of course. But he saw nothing else. He just couldn't think of nothing else that could somehow make a difference, that could somehow stop it or at least slow down the process of demoralization, which was setting in and which was unbearable. And that is why I think that he should never be forgotten. And that is also why I think that it should be remembered and it should be recorded and testimonies should be collected of the demoralization, of the falsehood, of the lies, of the suppression of truth, but mainly of the falsehood, lies, hypocrisy that was forced onto decent people by the regime, because that will be forgotten. The generation that experienced it will die out. The documents, testimonies will disappear.
And how could this demoralization happen so quickly? I mean, he died just 5 months after the Soviet invasion. There'd been all this hope and optimism that seemed to be extinguished like a candle just at one moment.
Well, because incredibly quickly, people whom we respected until that moment started disclaiming what they stated during the Prague Spring and started backing out. And that was awful. And for a young person that actually believed that the Prague Spring could succeed, it must have been unbearable.
Can you give me some examples of this, of what was going on?
For instance, a friend's son was crying because his father didn't want him to wear the pioneer's red scarf to school. And the father said, it's a question of principle, and my child is never going to wear a a pioneer scarf. This red scarf, I simply don't want to see it on your neck. As I told you, it's a question of principle, and no way shall you wear this scarf. It's out of question. So the child didn't. And then some days later, the child's teacher, a non-party member, very well loved by all the kids, an extremely good teacher, asked the father to come for a talk and told the father, look, if your boy doesn't come with the pioneer scarf, I can understand why you don't want him to. But if he doesn't come, I'll be fired. So the same father told the same child, tomorrow you will wear the pioneer scarf. Isn't that awful?
It's like a kind of a moral blackmail that's working its way through each level of society, as it were.
And you know, people got so used to it. The very fact that children knew that they are being taught lies at school, that people knew that they were being told lies by the media, and that their parents, that their seniors, are accepting the status quo and not revolting, that in itself was demoralizing. There is a lot of talk about corruption, and of course the high-level corruption is awful and is costing the country an awful lot of money. But the petty corruption really started during the communist regime, because you couldn't get anything without giving extra money, without corruption. You couldn't get your car serviced, you couldn't get your water faucet fixed, you couldn't get anything without paying some extra.
There was a saying that went around, wasn't there, that if you don't steal from the state, you're stealing from your family?
Yes, there was such a saying, yes. And taking things from the state was really not considered as dishonest, even by decent people.
And we're living with that legacy now?
In small ways, yes.
And I'd like to talk about the legacy of Jan Palach today. We're living in an age where we see and read in the news every day about suicide bombers, about people who sacrifice their lives, but in a very different way. And I suppose you could say it's a kind of grotesque parody, in a sense, of what Palach did. What do you think the Palach's legacy would be for us today in the Czech Republic, or even on a broader scale?
That one should never betray one's own conscience, and that one should never sell one's soul, give in, give up to something that one despises and cannot accept and agree with. It applies even now.
At any cost?
At any cost. Not at somebody else's expense. But personally, I would say at any cost.
Yaroslava Mozorova, thank you very much indeed.
You are welcome.
Stvořil Bůh ratolest. Bych mohl věnce vás.